Hey everyone, welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan Budd here, and today I have an awesome episode. I have Bill Vanderhayden from Ironwell Broadheads. He's the owner and lead engineer, is that what you said? Or a designer?
Yep, I'm a mechanical engineer, so I do the product design development as well as run the company at this point.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jordan.
Yeah, for sure. So what we had kind of talked about was you had come from kind of an Eastern background and then moved out West. And that's kind of what I wanted to cover. And you mentioned to me before as well that you get a lot of customer questions asking about how they should change their setup when they go out West for like elk or mule deer or something like that. Like something that's a little bit different than whitetail. So I thought we would just cover all of that.
Yeah, I do for sure. It's kind of a two different worlds out there. And a lot of times I'll need to find out, well, what's the person hunting? What kind of range is he going to be shooting? Things like that. Because I think there's, I wouldn't say misinformation, but there's a lot of different information out there and it may or may not apply to you depending on what you're going to hunt, what distance you want to shoot, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. So could you just give us a little background on kind of where you came from and then where you moved out West and what, maybe how very generally how things changed from one place to the other?
So I grew up in Wisconsin hunting whitetails, and yeah, bow hunting whitetails was my favorite thing to do. I rifle hunted too, cause you can do both there. But, I was kind of obsessed with that. I think I shot 20 whitetail bucks by the time I was 20 years old, which, doesn't sound legal, but it is actually, cause you can do it with a rifle and a bow. And then you can party hunt there too. So if somebody didn't want to hunt anymore, I could fill their tag and things like that. So I was really into whitetail hunting. And to be honest, it was a negative for me moving out West. So I moved to Colorado here about 20 years ago, got into hunting elk and mule deer, and really became pretty obsessed with elk hunting primarily. And the things I'd learned from whitetail hunting were, negatively impacting me, I think, in terms of it was really the only animal I knew as far as big game animals or had observed. And so, you know, I had all these things in my head of how I need to act when a whitetail is around. And you know, basically, I'm set up in a tree stand, not moving when they're, can see me and draw. It's very controlled, you know, drawing the bow. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's just very different than out West hunting when you're, you know, often on the ground, on the move. You've got to make maybe a quick decision to make a shot, and the shots are often further. And that was a big factor for me. 20 years ago, I was not very successful. I was big game hunting, and, you know, jump ahead 20 years, like last year, I had eight hunts and got eight animals. So I was successful in all of them, even like over the counter archery elk tag, nice 6-point bull, and public land antelope, some of the kind of lower percentage hunts. And I attribute a lot of that to, and I mean, there's better hunters than me. I'm really happy that I've gotten to the point where I'm generally successful now instead of, you know, eating tag soup like I was when I started. And you know, a couple main things, but extending my range was definitely a big one for me. And then another one was just kind of perfecting all my equipment and increasing my penetration on animals through the arrow setup and broadheads. And, you know, that got me into designing engineering broadheads as well.
Awesome. So your archery setup, I guess let's talk about the arrow setup first. How did that change going from East to West? And how would you... what do you like to see? Oh, I had a couple different questions written down here. I'm trying to combine them. What do you like to see people change? Like, what's one of the first things that you would say they need to look at for their arrow setup when they go from like a whitetail to an elk?
Yeah. One thing is like, what range do they want to shoot? And for me, extending my range definitely improved my success. I would have had a lot of opportunities in that 50 to 65 yard range. I used to pass up a lot of those shots, and now I take those shots. And you know, of the I think my mountain goat was at 70 yards last year. My elk was at 52. Antelope was at 52. Mule deer was at 61. So those are kind of in my wheelhouse at this point because I practice those shots a lot. And you can't just do that instantly. That's really getting to know your bow and bow tuning and making sure that arrow's coming straight off the bow. Having, you know, enough fletching for the broadhead, things like that. Just specifically you asked about elk. So for elk, you may not have to extend your range a lot. To me, it really did help to be able to just make 50 yard shot on an elk. Like my bull last year was 52 yards going through the aspen. And that was the one opening, that one shot that I had. So being able to shoot that far, I think is good. The other thing with elk is, you know, they're a lot bigger than a whitetail. And that's really what got me started developing broadheads years ago. I hit an elk in the shoulder blade and the broadhead failed and got very little penetration. And so, you know, a couple things you can do there. One is you can have a little bit heavier arrow weight. A heavier arrow, your bow is a little bit more efficient with the heavier arrow. I was actually just looking at this with my setup yesterday. If I went with the new bow I have, that's about 77 pounds. I typically have shot 70, but with this bow at 500 grains, I'm going 295 feet per second. And at 530 grains, I'm going at 285 feet per second. Well, that's a few or maybe 5% increased momentum just by going with a heavier arrow. And the reason for that is I think your bow is a little more efficient when your arrow is a little heavier. I could probably gain some more with the heavier arrow yet. So really penetration is, your momentum, the change of momentum is going to equal force over time. And so if you can increase your momentum, you can increase penetration. So one way to do that is, a little bit heavier arrow, your bow is a little more efficient. So you start out with, you know, there's more energy transfer from your bow to your arrow at the shot. And then when your arrow leaves the bow to when it hits the animal, really you've got some drag there slowing it down. And the faster your arrow is, the more, you know, velocity that gets shed, the more momentum gets reduced because drag is proportional to velocity squared. So a little heavier arrow, you'll retain more of that momentum out there at the target. So, but that's a bit of a trade-off because, you know, the heavier arrow is, you're not going to have as good a trajectory. So I often tell people, you know, go as heavy as you can, but still with the trajectory that you're happy with, you know, see how much the arrow is dropping off, what kind of range you're trying to shoot. That's what you can do to kind of improve your momentum as you're hitting the animal. And from then on, it's what broadhead is on the front of it and how much force does it take for that broadhead to penetrate. And that's really when I first had that shoulder blade failure, I was really going for something that would penetrate through a shoulder blade and hopefully, you know, through the elk. And I started testing a lot of broadheads. And that's when I saw that a two blade head would cut on contact, two blade would far out penetrate a three blade or a four blade or way, you know, much higher than a mechanical as well. And so that started me down the route of testing a lot of broadheads and engineering a broadhead and testing just a couple of months ago. And I've done this before, but I repeated it with some Audad parts that I had, you know, hide over hind quarter. So hide over muscle and then hide muscle and a shoulder blade. And I pushed different broadhead designs down through those in it with the Instron machine. So it measures the force. I get this force over time profile and I can look at what was the peak force and how much energy did it take to penetrate. And I was just kind of summarizing some plots yesterday and I can send you this, Jordan, but what I saw was for the hide and muscle, the iron will broadhead. So, you know, iron will is, it's a two blade with bleeders, but it's extremely sharp out of the package, and the edge retention is really, really good. And I found those to be kind of key factors in keeping the force to penetrate low. So that hide muscle, it took about 11 pounds to penetrate that with either our S100, S125, or even our wide. They're all within a pound or so. Compare that to, so that's 11 pounds. Compare that to a three-blade chisel point, jumped up to 81 pounds to push through that. A three-blade, one-piece kind of cut-on-contact design took about 60 pounds to go through that. And then a rear-deploying mechanical, I maxed it out at 150 pounds, and it didn't actually make it through. And so you can see that, you know, so that momentum is going to equal force over time. So if you can cut your force to penetrate in half, you're going to get double the penetration. It's kind of a one-to-one improvement. So, you know, what, so it was kind of a long way to say, you know, I think for an elk or a bigger animal, when you want to get that more penetration and be able to, you know, work for shots where things don't go perfect, you say you hit a shoulder blade, a durable cut on contact head will give you far more penetration than a three blade or three blade chisel point, or for sure mechanical.
Gotcha. Yeah. As for being sharp, I went on a hunt with the Crispy guys last fall in Wyoming, and Justin shot his bull at like 52 yards, I think. And when we picked up the arrow, I personally hadn't been around the Iron Wills, or really those style of broadheads much. That's the first time. And so he shot the bull at like 52 yards, went straight through him, like clean through him, but didn't hang up in the bull. And then the bull ran off and it fell out of him. It like zipped straight through him. And I picked that thing up and went to feel how sharp it was. And I was sold from then on. And I've talked about that before on the podcast. That was definitely a major turning point for me, and where I think that even though those are extra money, like it's worth it, especially since you can keep resharpening. I mean, it's like a knife. It's not just a disposable head, you know?
Right. And that took a lot of years of engineering work. What I realized, you know, initially I was just going for, I want to make it through the shoulder blade and, you know, not bend or break or anything. And then as I started working at this, I realized a lot of broadheads aren't that sharp out there. And also I realized that as I improved our sharpness, probably 10X over a few years, that all of a sudden force to penetrate was getting lower and lower, and penetrations were, you know, we were zipping through animals. Like, that's probably the thing I hear most from customers, is they're blown away by the penetration. They've just, you know, I talked to a guy last year that he never passed through a deer before. In like 15 years of hunting, you know, he was using mechanicals, but I mean, that was just, I couldn't believe that. Whereas like in my elk last year, 52 yard shot, I mean, I zipped through that elk and literally stuck in the dirt about 8 inches on the other side of the elk. And it ran out there to 67 and hunched over. And I'm, you know, it was a good shot. It was going to die, but, I'm a firm believer in if they're still there, shoot them again. And I put another one through them quartering away at 67. And it cut the back edge of the shoulder blade on the far side. And the two holes were like an inch apart, but it did a complete pass through, and the arrow was laying there on the ground as well at 67 yards, including shoulder blade. So yeah, it's amazing what a really sharp edge in something that stays sharp, slicing all the way through, can really, and I mean, it makes sense. If you can reduce that force to cut, it's going to go further through an animal.
Yeah, for sure. So with that up in your arrow weight to gain momentum there, what are you at right now, and what do you like is there a range that seems to be the sweet spot with kind of everybody? It depends, of course, but what do you think is kind of that from this weight to this weight?
Yeah, and it'll depend a little bit on the person and the setup. I mean, I like 450 grains kind of plus for elk. And I mean, I think it's good for all animals, but that's what I often recommend to people. If they're in the low 400s, I'll often encourage them to, hey, switch to the 125 head and, make sure you're not, and if you use an arrow where you're not underspined, you're probably pushing more into that 450 or higher range. And if guys want to go 550 or whatever, I mean, that's fine too. Often often when I ask people, what's your arrow weight? And they say 650, like, oh, you're an Ashby disciple, right? Yeah. Because that's what people kind of remember from Ashby's reports is single bevel, 650 grain, 3-to-1. And that's all fine if you're, especially if you're going to shoot a Cape Buffalo at 15 yards. Go extreme, go high FOC, really heavy arrow, all that. I don't have a problem with any of that. But for me, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't get the arrow speed I want, the trajectory for long range shooting. And so that's why I'll often ask people, what range do you want to shoot and what are you going to shoot at? Personally for me, I've got three bows set up right now. I've got the one I've hunted with the last 2 years, which is a Hoyt RX1, 70 pound. That one, I've got a couple of different arrow setups in that, but they're off. I've got a 480, 502 is what I hunted with last year on those eight animals, 502 grains. And that was going about 280 feet per second. I think 1 year I shot a setup that was maybe 515 out of that bow. And my 77 pound bow I've got set up right now. I've got some 502 grain arrows, but they're going 295. I'd rather go up to 530. So that's probably what I'll hunt with this year. It's going 285 feet per second. Nice. Part of what I want to do is I want to shoot 120 yards. I want to be able to shoot that far for practice. Mm-hmm. That might sound crazy to people, but really by extending my range from 40 yards and under, which was kind of the whitetail world, really 30 and under is really most of the shots there. But extending that to be like 40 to 80 yards where I'm comfortable, or say 40 to 70, really, I'm very comfortable with making those shots out there. To do that, I like to practice to 100 plus because I know that, standing in my backyard shooting is so much easier than I just hiked up this ridge. I hear a bull bugling. I've got to get an arrow in my bow, get this drawn back. With all the excitement, the wind, the uneven terrain, all the stuff that can go on. Take whatever your max range is in the backyard, and take 2/3 of that, or 3/4 of that, or something like that. So,
yeah,
that's why I like to shoot longer range. I've got fixed targets from 30 to 100 yards at my range here, and I'll throw a few arrows at 100 yards pretty much every day. I'll shoot fixed blade heads too. I'm usually shooting one or two fixed blades and one or two field points. But I'll shoot a couple of broadheads at 100 yards like every day. Like yesterday I shooting the S125, shot a few groups, and I just kind of measured them to see where I'm at. And I was shooting about 6-inch groups at 100 yards with fixed blade heads. And I know a lot of people think you can't do that. You need mechanicals. And you sure can do it. I know a lot of guys that use our heads that are able to. You just need to put more time into getting your bow tuned and making sure your arrow's not under spine, making sure you have enough fletch, get the arrow spinning, put a couple degrees or more helical or offset. Put some more time into your setup because, my opinion is if you guys shoot mechanicals to shoot long range, there's something wrong with your setup.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't, I'm not saying like any fixed head that's 3 inches long and 1.5 inches wide or something. No, that's probably not going to shoot well, but if it's a relatively compact fixed head, there's no reason that you can't shoot those long range, to me. And, nearly everybody says they get really good flight with our heads, but once in a while I get somebody that has a problem, and I'll work with them a little bit, and it's typically underspined, can do it. And some guys know they're underspined and they do it anyways because they want to get a certain speed level. And I'll tell them, well, you shouldn't do it because you're losing efficiency, that excessive flexing of the arrow. You're losing energy there that you could have more retain momentum if you're not doing that. And also, field points, mechanicals, whatever, are not going to fly as well when you're underspined. So it's either a guy's trying to achieve a certain speed he thinks he needs, or he's into the high FOC thing where he just wants to throw some more weight up front, but doesn't want to change his arrow. So I see that a lot too.
Gotcha.
Like, can I shoot 150 grain heads with this 340 spine, you know, shooting 72 pounds? Like, no, don't do it. Either, you know, use the 100 grain head, or, you know, it depends on their draw length and everything, but, you know, stick with your 100 or 125 grain head or change the arrow to be properly spined. So in those things, you can probably get away with those more if you're in that whitetail world of, you know, 30 yards and under for most of your shots. But if you're trying to extend your range out, these things just become more critical.
Gotcha. Yeah. So on your broadheads, and there's other people who have similar broadheads, I guess, but like vented versus the solid designs, what do you think on those?
Yeah, the initial design I came out with, V100, V125, it was vented. And I really did that too, because I wanted to have a relatively thick blade, 62 thousandths thick tool steel. And I wanted to, you know, hit the 100 grain weight point. So I used a titanium ferrule and a vented blade to get to that. And it's a very strong head, and it's a really great flying head. And part of the reason I put the vents there as well is that I wanted to, you know, in theory, a vented head could fly better than a fixed blade head because you've just got less surface area there for pressure to act. That can make it plane or anything like that. So that was the reason I did it initially. And then I guess the negative with the vented head is that there's a little more noise to it. There's a bit of a, like, shish or hiss, to vented heads in general. And so doing some sound testing, and really it was Aaron Snyder was hunting with them, and he was doing well with him. He shot an antelope. I think I can say this now because he repeated on a podcast, yeah. But he got an antelope at like 114 yards with our V100 or V125 probably. Mm-hmm. But basically it's the same head, different ferrule weight. A double lung shot on an antelope way out there. So, you know, he said they're shooting great. There's a little bit of noise to them. And so it pushed me to do a bunch of sound testing. And what I realized is that, yep, I can put a solid blade and reduce the sound quite a bit. But I also realized that, so what I did is a friend of mine was a sound engineer. He brought out his microphones and systems, and we set up and shot through microphones that were set up downrange and then had the target further downrange. And then we could get sound amplitude over time. And I shot, I think, 13 different broadheads, as well as different vanes and field points. And what I gathered from all that is that I don't think it's as big a factor as people think, because I really didn't see the flare up from either a certain vane or a vented head until just a couple of yards before passing through the microphone. So anyways, they can be kind of loud when it's really close to you, but at the shot, you get this louder noise from the shot of the bow, and then arrows are pretty quiet in that first 10, 20 yards coming down range. Then as it gets very close, there's a bit of a flare up if you have a certain vane or a certain or a vented head is a little louder than a fixed blade head. But mm-hmm. Anyway, through that, I realized, one, I didn't think it mattered as much as people thought. But two, I could also, a solid head, I could just make it quieter. And so I came out initially with just the S125, filled in the holes, and then it pushed the weight up to a 125 with a titanium ferrule. And then eventually designed a little more, a little bit shorter length main blade and ferrule so they could do a solid 100 grain, as well. But, those are really been our three top sellers. There's still our V100, then our solid 125 and our S100. Those are all pretty close to each other in popularity.
Gotcha. Awesome. So kind of moving away from the arrow setups, what other archery, just on your whole archery setup, changes did you make? And one of the main things I think of is like your thoughts on the single pin versus a multi-pin sight for elk hunting.
Yeah, good question. So I was always kind of a fixed pin guy. Initially, probably back when I was a whitetail hunter, I probably just had 20, 30 and 40 yard pins. And then I kept adding kind of a fixed pin at 50, then 60, then 70. And for a while I had pins to 70, and then my bubble level was like the top of it was 80, the bottom was 90, and then my outer ring of my sight housing was like 100. But that was more like a novelty shot back then. It's not something I really would have hunted to or considered a shot. So I mean, I've evolved from that to probably 4 or 5 years ago, gone to a slider sight, and I really like that for longer distance. So I shoot it as a, currently I'm shooting like a black gold ascent, and I shoot it as a four pin. So I have fixed pins at 20, 30, 40, and 50. And then if I'm shooting past 50, if it's probably 55 or something, or even 60, and I have to make a quick shot, I won't dial it. I'll just, stack pins maybe for that. But otherwise, if I'm ranging and it's beyond 50, and what I'll do is I'll dial the sight. And I really like that when trying to make a, 68 yard shot, it's nice to put the pin right at 68 yards and not be, gapping it between 60 and 70 yard pins. Not that you can't do it. It's just that you really want to be at 68 yards. You want to be shooting for 68, not 66 or something. It's, you just get quite a bit more arrow drop out at that distance.
Yep. Totally agree. I use the exact same setup, except I'm using the Spot Hog, Tommy Hog, and I run five pins, and then that bottom pin is my reference for the slider. And I've got along really well with that. I tried to change, and I almost thought about changing to like a double pin, but I don't know. I can't get away from the five pin. I don't think. I always have this vision of like an elk coming in, and I think he's going to be on one trail, and then he goes at full draw. He goes out to 60 yards, and I'm at full draw for 35 yards, and I can't adjust. Like, I don't really have very many references to adjust with. So, I think that four or five pin is a good setup.
Yeah. I've only had one problem really with hunting with it. And it's that kind of deal where you need to draw and you don't know what the yardage is going to be yet. Or you've drawn and then the animal moves and now you're at some other distance, and that's all cool if you haven't dialed your sight and you still got pins. In your case, you'd have pins from 20 to 60 probably.
Yep.
But if it, let's say you've dialed your sight already to 68 and drawn, and then he comes and then he moves and comes in closer, that's where it gets kind of tough. And I don't know about you, but I get pretty excited in that situation, and my critical thinking sometimes goes out the window. Like, I got a quick, I have to calculate something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty good in math, but it's tough to do it. It's tough to do critical thinking when your heart rate and adrenaline and everything is up there. It's better to be as simple as you can make it. And,
yeah. Yep. Yeah, I totally.
And
agree.
That's another thing I was going to mention from difference from whitetail hunting to me to out west hunting. And not that whitetail hunting isn't exciting. I mean, I get excited there too, but it would be kind of overwhelming for me when I first would get into elk and there's a bugling bull and he's coming in and, I'm breathing hard from just hiking or moving or whatever. And then making that shot in that situation. And it's hard to tell, to give somebody advice on how to do that without, experiencing it. But I'd say having, keeping it simple, thinking through it. I mean, for a while I had to tell myself like, draw, aim and shoot. Cause there's a few times I was like, the elk came in and then things weren't perfect. I didn't draw, he's gone. And I'm like, why didn't I shoot him? And it was just because, kind of overwhelmed with the excitement of the situation. And to me, it still happens. Like last year, my bull elk, it was coming through the aspen. I'd snuck into where I'd heard it in the dark yet. I'd heard a bugle and moved into there. It started getting light. I could see him coming up through the aspen and he's bugling and chuckling. all I could see is antlers, and I thought, crap, I'm not going to get a shot. He's going through these saplings, and the antlers are moving through. And I was just, I mean, not that I was only excited, but then when I also feel like, man, I'm not going to get the shot, then I like want to rush something. And then I saw it opening up ahead of me, and I ranged two trees in it. One was at 48, another one was at 67. And when he came into that opening, I was drawn back because he's kind of coming into it. He came into it. I got my pins on him. Man, I wanted to punch that trigger so bad when I got my pins on him. I literally had to like yell at myself, like in my head, like, stop, do it right. Which pin, you know, I had to kind of talk myself through it. And, and, you know, I've gotten, I've gotten really successful. I think I've gotten five elk in the last 5 years now. But even so, I mean, I still get a little overwhelmed and excited at the moment of truth when that, you know, big 6-point bull is bugling and coming through. So, I mean, thinking through that for people and how you're going to handle that situation, keeping it simple, having your process down and going through it. I don't know exactly how to tell people to do that, but for me, that was important to get. It's more of a mental thing, but getting that all under control to the point where now, I mean, I still get excited, but I execute that good shot, even at long range. And I don't know how to tell people to do that exactly, but figuring it out is pretty important.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. What about the rest of your archery setup this year? What bow are you shooting and rest?
Yeah. So, I've gone to a Hamsky rest the last few years. Prior to that, I was shooting dropaways where you could kind of click them up into position. And I liked that, for kind of holding the arrow in place and everything versus the Hamsky where it kind of starts down and then, you know, pulls up when you draw, and it's in kind of a cage, but it's kind of in a down position. but I was having a problem with those dropaway rests. You know, I've seen this multiple times over the years, and I had the luxury of having a high speed camera, so I could look at my rest over time and see, oh, it used to drop when the arrow moved like 4 inches, and now it's dropping when the arrow's moved like a foot forward. And so that can change the way your bow shoots. And in hindsight, I attribute that to like once in a while, like my pins were off, I have to adjust things. And I was thinking, maybe it was that rest that was doing it. And eventually that can get to the point where it's your fletching is just starting to tick it. And I've had that happen twice over the years, with that style rest. And there's, you know, three or four different companies make those. So it's maybe not with all of them, but it's the experience I was having with them. And I finally said, that's enough. I just want a rest that's for sure going to be out of the way when my arrow gets there. So Hamsky is real reliable. I know the owners are kind of local here, good guys, but anyway, going to a Hamsky rest. And I feel like that's more just takes away potential problems, that can happen. I like that rest. The bow, I was a Matthews guys for years coming from Wisconsin. I've shot those for probably close to 20 years. Maybe 4 years ago, when the Hoyt RX1 came out is when I first got a Hoyt and a Matthews that year and set up both and decided to go with the Hoyt for a couple of years. And it was a lot different for me, the tuning of it, but I had to learn quite a bit about it, and I've got good contacts at both companies, you know, Hoyt and Matthews. And I really like both those bows. This year I bought a new Matthews VXR 31.5 in 75 pound and the Hoyt Axios in 70 pound. And I got them both tuned and shooting bullet holes pretty quickly. So those are the two bow companies I'm most familiar with, but I think they make great bows, and I think other companies do out there too. It's just that, I know I'm very, very comfortable setting up and shooting either of those bows. I like those pretty well. I like the little longer axle to axle, bows as well, which, Hoyt give you some good options there typically.
Yeah, gotcha. I bought the Matthews VXR this year as well. I bought the 28, so that's what I'm going to shoot. So far, really liking it. to the rest where you're talking about the lockups. So I shot a trophy taker last year, actually it's 2018 and 2019. And, I broke both of them. And I just went to a ham ski at the end of last year as well, after the last one broke. But one of the big things I noticed was just like the overall build of the ham skis seems better, like when you're comparing the two. And then the spring on the ham ski is, I like that, the system, how you adjust the drop away better. That trophy taker, I think the spring's not as solid as it needs to be. So like you said, over time, it just varies so much. And then mine got to the point where it would start dropping later. So I would try to tighten it down more, so it was dropping like it did before. And then the spring would break, and then I'd be totally screwed. So that was my experience with that. So since I went to that, the Hybrid Pro from Hamski, been really happy with that one so far. Looking forward to using it this year.
Yeah, I've got that Hybrid Hunter on my RX1 Ultra. And I've got Trinity Rests on the two new bows this year. And they're beefy. I like the Trinity. It adds some bearings on the outside, and pretty bomb-proof design, mechanical design, I think.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So what other gear changes did you have to make coming from east to west, even outside of archery stuff?
Yeah, I'll mention a little bit more on arrow setup too. Okay. Is that I get that once in a while. I mentioned if somebody has a problem shooting fixed heads, it's often their spine or bow tuning. And I guess the third thing I see once in a while is that somebody will be shooting a little target vane, small target vanes and no offset or 1 degree. That can be a problem as well. You know, you need, when you have a fixed blade head, or really mechanical too, you're getting some more surface area that, you know, any wind can act on and drive it a little bit off center. So you want to have it recover. Having a decent amount of FOC helps you as well. I would mention that there's some, you know, heavier arrows, out there, and it often pushes guys to like use a lighter head with it to get the total arrow weight they want. And then your FOC is pretty low, like 10% or below. And I'm not an extreme FOC guy. I don't, you know, the physics isn't really there for me to support why you need to go, you know, 19 to 30, like some guys want to, but I do like it to be up over, you know, 12, that 12 to 16 range, I think is pretty good. You just get a little more stability. Anyways, too small of a vane can be an issue, whereas you want to have a little bit more to steer it. I think like three high profile vanes works great with, say, 2 degree or more. I mean, I like a 3 degree offset or helical, or 2.5 is good too, offset or helical. That's kind of my ideal. Three high profile vanes of, say, Blazers or Max Hunters or QTI Fusion 2. Those are really, really good ones as well. And they're a little bit quieter, it seems like, than the Blazer or AE. Those are kind of my go-to, and that I know they work really well for broadheads at long range. If you're going with a little bit lower profile, can be a bit quieter, like a AE Max Stealth or Heat Vanes. And you know, these are my opinions and kind of from my testing. Those are like about a half inch tall. So they're a little bit lower profile. I don't think they steer quite as well as the higher profile, but they're quieter. A lot of guys go to those in like a four vane to get a similar amount of steering. I'm still a little bigger fan of the three higher profile. I just feel like I'm adding less weight in back, and they're very effective for the little bit of weight that they have. But okay. I mean, so that's my opinion on it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm using those, the AE Max Stealths, and mine are at a 2 degree offset. So it seems to be okay so far, but I have to admit I don't get too geeked out in the archery setup stuff. I just kind of change things a little bit, maybe year to year, but I guess test and compare a whole bunch of stuff. I just kind of have what I have, and if it's treated me well, then I keep it.
Yeah, do you do that in a 3-vein or 4-vein?
I did that in a 3. I think I was thinking about doing a 4-vein, but I just did it in a 3 this last time.
Yeah, I think that's a good setup. I met with Nick from AE at ATA a little bit and just asked him what veins he recommends. And he recommends the Max Stealth in a 4-vein for fixed heads. That's kind of his, he thinks that's a great setup. And I agree, it's a really good one. It's a nice quiet vein for sure.
Gotcha. So was there any other notable gear changes you made when you came out west and started hunting elk?
Rangefinder became really important.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, a good rangefinder that can, this is actually a fairly recent development. I switched to a Leupold rangefinder over an older, a little cheaper style one I had. And man, it works so much better to actually see like an animal in the shadow without pulling your binoculars out, when you can just use your rangefinder and see them better than you can with naked eye. So that's a fairly recent development that I realized, hey, having a rangefinder with good optics can be pretty, pretty important for getting that range quickly and getting a good shot. And working in low light, things like that.
To your point with the rangefinder, using your rangefinder, I just did a podcast last week with a guy that he wrote an article for Rockslide about 12 power binoculars and how that was a really good medium for him for Western hunting, because they were there. You can still handhold them okay, but on a tripod, they're really hard to beat. And I asked him, what about when you go to like stalking on a deer or whatever, and you need something with a little bit wider field of view? And he's like, I just use my rangefinder because I have to have it anyways. And that stuck with me because that it totally makes sense.
Yeah, I've gone from my rangefinder was like only for range because I can see better just with, even though I think it was a 6 power, I could see better with my naked eyes than looking through that thing. I went from that to now I use my rangefinder as like a quick binocular if things aren't that far out. And that was a piece of gear. It was really only a couple of years ago I figured that out, but that was a big improvement for me.
Gotcha.
For sure.
Gotcha. And I think there's a lot of people who still don't use a rangefinder. Like we run this outfitting business here in Nebraska, and we get a lot of guys from back east that come out for like muzzleloader hunting season. And a lot of those guys don't have rangefinders, and it's so flat out here that it's really hard to judge distance, especially like the difference between 60 and 70 yards. That's only 10 yard difference. It's really hard to tell when it's flat. And pretty much every single one of those guys have said, I need to have a rangefinder when I come back.
Yeah. You know, I don't like to use them if the animal's under 50, I've just blown too many things that could have been a shot by, it's only been a couple of times, but those still stick with me and are painful, where like I'm sneaking on a bull. I spotted him. I snuck around, got the wind right. I'm sneaking in there, and I get to where I think I'm gonna be able to see him. I pop up over the brush and I see him just standing there feeding a big 6-point bull 40 yards away. And I was thinking, he's at 40 yards, but I take the time to range him. And when I did that, there's a second bull saw me doing that. And so just as I'm drawing, he busts out and busts the elk out. And if I would have just thought, if I'd have just drawn and shot him with my 40 yard pin, I would have had a big bull in that situation. So ever since then, if I just look at it and think it's, my eyeball range is pretty decent. You know, I practiced that quite a bit. That's maybe another piece of advice is, I'll hike around. I live in the foothills here in Colorado, and I have an area I can hike and shoot my bow. And it can be kind of hard on arrows to stump shoot. But what I actually shoot is yucca plants with, and this is on my property, so it's okay if I'm damaging them, but I'll shoot yuccas with, like judo points, mm-hmm. the springy judo points. And so I'll just kind of walk around, eyeball range something, and then shoot it, and then range see what it really was. And, you know, so you can do that without shooting it too. I mean, but walking around in the woods, guessing yardage, ranging it, getting good at judging yardage, is also helped me be successful. I think when I know the shots are under 50, say, if I look at it, I'm thinking, oh, 35, I just want to draw and shoot, or 47, I just want to draw and shoot. And that's part of why I don't go extreme FOC or very heavy arrow, is I want to have a flat enough trajectory I can be off by a few yards and still keep it in the vitals. But I know that if I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's over 50. Even if I think I know the range, I'm gonna range it, because being off a few yards when you're over 50 can be a significant difference. So,
gotcha. Yeah, I totally agree with the recommendation that you should go out and just try to take, like, look at something, guess what the range is, and then hit it with your rangefinder, see how close you are. Because that's something that you can do anywhere. You can do it in your backyard to a certain extent, and then you could just do it anywhere. You don't have to shoot to do it. And I think that's a really good way to, I guess, practice your craft or whatever, without actually having to, like, it's something that you can do anywhere.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people just rely on the rangefinder now, and I, you know, that's okay, but it can cost you an animal. It's cost me an animal when I've taken that time to range that extra movement or whatever. Cause oftentimes you can draw your bow and even that movement might get their attention, but you can still get that shot off. Whereas if you move and range it and put it down, that movement might get their attention, and then it's tough to draw and get that shot. So, mm-hmm. and yeah, if I'm in close quarters, I like to get that shot off. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. One other thing that kind of popped into my head is that another thing I think that's, you know, helped my success. So, you know, durability of the head and more penetration with the broadhead, extending my range. But a fourth thing is probably being able to take shots other than that perfect broadside shot. You know, I think being a whitetail hunter, that's just what I did. I was in a tree, it was a controlled situation, the animal's coming through. I'm often going to get presented a broadside or quartering way shot, and that's what I considered a good ethical shot. And in early years in Colorado, I passed up a lot of shots I would take now, like a frontal on a frontal or even a slight quartering. I mean, if you know where those bones are in the animal, and it's fairly close shot, you know, a frontal on an elk is that's a shot that you're going to get presented quite often, you know, if you're calling or whatever. That's a good shot to be able to make. And I've made those on mule deer. Actually, my last, in the last 3 years, I've done two kind of slight quartering, two shots on mule deer. And you know, I feel more comfortable doing that because I know I also have a broadhead that if I do hit that shoulder blade, it's going to go through it. And one of those two shots on mule deer, he turned a little bit at the shot and it did go right through the shoulder blade and it got a complete pass through, came out near his hind quarter. But that was a quick kill. And so, yeah, being able to take those shots other than a perfect broadside shot, you don't have to. And I'm totally cool with if a guy says, I'm not going to take anything but that, you know, I don't, you know, ethically, that's the shot I want. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Just, you're going to, I mean, personally, I didn't take as many animals when I passed the shots up because maybe I get, you know, a couple of shots that week and that was one of them, you know? So I think it gives you more opportunities. That's another reason that I think people should go to a durable fixed blade head that can go through a shoulder blade versus a mechanical or even some of the weaker three blade, you know, maybe aluminum ferrule or something that's going to give a lot where the blades could break or that ferrule could bend when you hit that bone, it's going to suck up all the energy and reduce penetration. Can be a problem because you really want to get through both lungs on an elk. That 8 inches of penetration or something to one lung isn't going to put them down, and they can go a long ways. They're a tough animal.
Gotcha. So anything new coming from Iron Will this year?
So the new thing we launched this year was the wide series heads.
Yep.
So that was, they're 30% wider than our V series or S series. So our V and S series are 1 1/16 wide main blade and 3/4 inch wide bleeder for 1.8, 1/2 inch total cut. And our wide series are 1 3/8 wide main blade, 3/4 inch bleeder. So 2 1/8 inch total cut. So we have those from 100 grain up to 225 grain. So that's kind of our new broadhead for the year. We also added some components. I licensed the hit insert technology from Easton. So we now make hardened steel and titanium hit inserts, ranging from 15 grain and then 25 grain, 50, 75, and 100 grain options there for people that want to, you know, kind of dial in that upfront weight. We also make these impact collars. And we were making those last year as well, where it's a sleeve that goes over the arrow, and it works well with the hit insert. The reason I like the hit insert is because then the arrow's aligning, the shank of the broadhead aligns directly to the ID of the arrow shaft for excellent alignment. And that's something that's important for this long range shooting, is that your fixed head spins really true. It doesn't, if you've got that point wobbling around, it's gonna kind of catch a little wind as you're trying to fly, and it's gonna open up your groups and move it off. So anyway, with the 204 ID arrow and your broadhead aligned directly to the ID, and then pick an arrow that has good straightness, it's pretty much guaranteed to spin true. And then if you put that impact collar, it's either a 1 inch hardened steel, or make a 0.7 inch titanium, grade 5 titanium sleeve that goes over it to just make that more robust for impact. So those are both new in the last year or so here.
Okay, man, that's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Unless there's anything you kind of want to, you add to it. I think we covered a lot of things.
Yeah, that's about it. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully there's some piece of advice here that can help the Eastern guys coming out west. I think it's, I think with a lot of advice that's out there, you've got to kind of see, does that fit for you? In your style of hunting, it's really not a one size fits all on anything. And what you need for your setup, unfortunately, it's not a one size fits all there either. Often you got to do a little testing, you know, go shoot some field points at different weights and see what your trajectory looks like, see what kind of groups you get. And you really kind of got to figure out for your own setup and situation what works best for you.
Gotcha. Yep, totally agree. And not to drag this on any further, but back to when you were talking about the, your arrow weights. We were talking about arrow weights. You know, there's a few guys that have told me that I need to shoot a 550 grain arrow or more than that, 550, 580, or just kind of recommend that. And I really like how you said it just doesn't fit everybody, because I mean, I could shoot 580 grains, but then I'd only be able, my max pin would be like 40 yards maybe. And that's just not really what I want to do. I want to be able to stretch out there a little bit further. So I've kind of, this year anyways, I'm going to shoot 490 is what I've ended up on. And I think I shot stuff with like 480 grains in the past. And I think that 490 with this new setup is going to be kind of my sweet spot, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I've set my sons up at about 450, for instance. So that was for elk. So I don't think being under 500 is really a problem. It just depends on the trajectory. And what I see happening is more and more guys are finding the Ashby reports, I think, and reading them. I mean, it's kind of funny to me. I mean, I found them 16 years ago and read them, and went real heavy for a couple of years and then realized, man, these are, I'm like throwing logs out there. I'm not getting any trajectory out of this. And then it was about the time I started doing a bunch of other broadhead and arrow testing. And I mean, Ashby's a great guy. I talked to him about 2 weeks ago for like an hour on the phone, and really good guy. Man, I got a lot of respect for all the work he did, but a lot of it was at, you know, 10 yards, 10 to 15 yards. A lot of his data is 10 yards on dead animals, big animals like buffalo, Cape buffalo, Asian buffalo, you know, laying on the ground with, and shooting them with longbows. So, and I'm not trying to say his stuff isn't good or important, but it doesn't apply to everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not shooting Cape buffalo at 10 yards, you know, you probably don't need a 650 plus grain arrow. I'm not saying you can't, but there's trade-offs with all these things. Yeah. And really, when I talked to Ashby, we agreed on a lot of stuff. You know, I told him that when I test a single bevel versus double bevel, I actually found the sharpness and edge retention trumped that by far. I could get a much better penetration out of a double bevel with the sharper edge and better edge retention than I was getting out of a single bevel. And he agreed. And he said, that's number six. And bevel is like number 10 on his list of what's most important. You know, sharpness and retaining that edge, he felt was really important as well. But you never hear that. I think guys just have in their head that, oh, I got to be single bevel and 650 grain plus. And also the 3-to-1 ratio thing. I said, you know, I didn't see that in my testing, that 3-to-1 over 2-to-1 mattered. And he said in his testing, he tested 3-to-1 ratio versus 2.5-to-1 or 2.6-to-1 and didn't see a difference either. So he didn't disagree with me there. But anyway, I think I hear just a bunch of guys just kind of quoting Ashby stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it works well for the Out West hunter quite often. I mean, it's fine if you're going to shoot at elk in 30 yards and under, you know, go crazy with it. But for at least for me personally, and wanting to have that extended range to make those 55, 60 yard shots, which is a lot of my shots actually are at that range, that's super heavy and extreme FOC. This isn't what I want for trajectory.
Interesting. All good stuff. I think people are going to pick up a lot of good tips out of this. I know I've learned quite a bit already. So I thank you for hopping on, Bill.
Yeah, you bet. Any more questions, just feel free to give me a call whenever.
Definitely. Sounds good. Thanks.